Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur.
Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 391 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyler, your host as usual. Today, my guest is once again, Wendy Meadows. Now, that name seems familiar to you. She was a guest of ours back on episode 307 in March of 2022, so not that long ago. Back then, she talked about time management techniques. But today I wanted to talk to her primarily about her new book that she has out, her first book called Sparkle and Grit, Live a Technicolor Life by Finally Finding Balance, Escaping Monotony, and Beating Burnout. And it's really, honestly, one of the best books I've read on the subject. Now, Wendy is a attorney, a reformed litigator, a mom, a wife. She checks all those boxes. And more, most importantly these days, she's a life coach. And we're going to have a wide-ranging discussion, a lot about her book, but also about services that she offers, particularly to law firms, to help coach up their employees. And I think it's kind of a brilliant niche where she fits in that space. So without any further delay, here, once again, is Wendy Meadows. Wendy Meadows, welcome back to The Law Entrepreneur.
It is so much fun to be back.
So for our audience that may not recognize the name, Wendy was a very special guest of ours back in March of 2022 on episode 307. And so we are really happy to welcome you back to the show. Wendy, tell our audience who may not have been with us at that time a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Yeah, so I'm an attorney. I've been a family law attorney since 2005, so I think that makes it about 18 years now. I no longer litigate, but I would say my law practice is primarily focused on mediation. So I help moms, dads, husbands, wives, partners reach amicable resolutions for their divorce or custody before it ends up in a courtroom. So that's where I wear my legal hat most of the time. And then I have this other business as well where I'm a life coach. And as a life coach, I serve primarily lawyers and all throughout the United States. And most recently, I added one more title to my ever-growing list of titles, and that is I am now a best-selling published author. And I think that is the one I am most excited about as I talk to you today, just because it is something, and I've always wanted to write a book, and now it's real. So I think that's what makes me most excited right now.
All right, we're gonna jump right to the chase and make sure that we give proper notice to your new book or your book. Tell our audience what's it all about. I know the title. I have a beautiful copy here. Thank you very much for providing it. And let's share that news with the audience.
Yeah. It is pretty, isn't it? It's a very pretty book.
It's a very attractive book. I got to tell you, it catches your eye.
Yeah. And I designed it myself too. So I'm pretty, for the most part, like I had someone like help like edit it, but I designed it. So I'm pretty pumped about that. But the book is called Sparkle and Grit. And the tagline is Live a Technicolor Life by Finally Finding Balance, Escaping Monotony, and Beating Burnout.
Well, it says it all right there. How did the book come about? What prompted you to write it? And what was driving you through the process?
Sure. So all my life, I've known I've wanted to write a book. Ever since I was little, I was always an avid reader. As soon as I learned how to read, I was that kid that went to the library, checked out as many books as I could, like 30 books at a time, read them over the course of the 3 weeks, made my mom take me back and got, another 20 to 30 books. So I've always been a huge fan of reading.
Can I just stop you right there for a second?
Sure.
Yeah. Doesn't that, it frustrates me when I hear people say, I don't like to read, or I don't want to spend my time reading. I feel like it's a waste of time. I just, reading is one of the most magical gifts that we have as humans.
Agreed. So much. And when we read, it really does this amazing thing where we are transported, you know, to a different universe, right? Like we are completely immersed in the storyline, or we're completely immersed in the coaching of that person or the words. And I'm sure you can say the same thing, but there are certain books in my life that have changed my life completely. Just like one line in a book, I'm like, oh my gosh, what am I doing with myself? And then I take action, right? So that's what I'm hopeful my book will do for others. Yeah. And I think you also asked me, so how did this come about? Well, I'm not a good fiction writer. I tried many times to write fiction, and my fiction, I can say it, it's okay. It's crap. It's not going to get better. I have tried, and that's okay. That's okay. Because even though I'm not a good fiction writer, I'm a really, really good nonfiction writer, I believe. And this is something we were talking about before we started the show. I believe where my strength lies is when I write to the reader, I'm writing exactly to the reader, to the person, so they feel like I am spying on them, sort of, and in the same room as them, and imparting the fact that they are now heard. Like, I get them, I understand them, and then also to try and get them out of their funk. And I believe that is where my secret sauce is. So it's okay, I'm not a good fiction writer, because I think I'm a pretty darn good nonfiction writer.
Well, I will say that when I was reading the book, that it's very conversational. I mean, you literally feel like you're having a conversation. You're listening to you have that conversation. And I think that's the best kind of narrative. Because if I read a, you know, quote, self-help book, and I have to translate what it's saying to my own experience, sometimes that translation gets lost, and I lose the effectiveness of the advice being given. But with your book, I really did feel like, you know, I'm sitting here with this lady in my office, chatting with me. Sometimes she's kind of mean.
it's tough. It's not mean, you know. It's tough love.
Tell me a little bit about the writing process. How'd you go about scoping out the book and getting it across the finish line?
Yeah. Well, I adored the writing process. Number one, just because I find writing so cathartic. So the actual writing of the book was a treat for me, to the point I'm already thinking, oh, what should I write next? So the writing process really began in earnest in March of just this year, March of 2023. I went to a really cool conference out in California, and the conference was designed for those of us wanting to write nonfiction books designed to help other people, you know, to help other people with their lives. And it was really cool. And I hired that coach. And by hiring that coach, I was given access to his team of editors and layout people and all those sorts of things. And I was making some pretty good headway in the book. And then he's like, okay, well, before you get too far, you know, you need to sit down with the developmental editor. And this is, I didn't even know what these things were back then. Like, mm-hmm. The developmental editor is someone to kind of make sure your outline is correct and you're talking about, you're going about your chapters in the right order, in the right fashion, and that they're organized in a way, you know, you get to tell your story, but your readers are getting something out of it as well. And then the more traditional editing at the end, which is, you know, straight up like your high school AP English teacher has torn apart your essay and you have all the tack changes or all the red pen. And by doing that process, you become a better writer because you learn, you learn as you go. So that coaching was amazing in that way. And I was very lucky that I found him. But basically the writing process in general was my first hour of every morning, definitely half hour, was sitting down, setting a timer and writing for 30 minutes. And as I wrote for 30 minutes, like when I was done, I looked at my word count and I can't remember I think it was 500 words a day. So long as I hit my word count, I was happy. I allowed myself to stop if I was not in flow. But there were times when I was in flow, you know, where you completely lose track of time, what's happening. The words could not come out of my fingertips fast enough. Mm-hmm. And if that was one of my days, then writing took precedence there. Like anyone who knows me, like knows I work out a lot. I work out daily. I will say there are times in the writing journey where if I was in such a state of flow, the book writing came first because I knew this wasn't going to be forever. You know, I wasn't going to lose my workout team forever, but it might be, hey, hon, you're in charge of the kids this morning. I have all these good ideas. I need to get them down. Like, you're in charge. And my husband was pretty good at taking the baton and say, okay, I got it. But that's how the writing process looked like most days.
Well, share with the audience a little bit about how the book is structured and what are some of the challenges that you address in the book.
Yeah. So the book is structured, number one, when you read it, everyone I've talked to has read the introduction, has laughed a lot and cried a lot. And I think it's amazing. Yeah. Basically, to really like ensure the reader, like, I get you, I know you. Like, and the reader, the person who I was writing to was me 7 years ago, right? But it is the working professional, in my case, a working mom, who prides herself on being a good mom, prides herself on being a good attorney, and really wants to have the best of both worlds, who has worked so freaking hard to get to where she got to in terms of, you know, became a partner in the law firm, had a thriving law practice, got married, had the two kids, has the two dogs, has the house, but yet is feeling extremely incomplete and blah. So that is the person who I was writing to, and that's the person I think I'm describing in the introduction. And basically what this book is a roadmap of sorts to get you out of the blah to the technicolor life. And the technicolor life is the life that you get to choose. It's not just all these things that have been told by others that this is what you must achieve, but what actually makes you happy? What actually makes you want to jump out of bed? Who in your life is serving you? Who isn't? You know, and just really getting down to the deeper questions that we can get to once we've, you know, sort of accomplished all these things that we're supposed to accomplish. And each chapter is a different chunk, you know, of the roadmap to help, again, help me get out of my funk into technicolor. So I talk about things such as a morning routine, like having a killer morning routine. I talk about things such as future planning your day to make sure you're setting yourself up for the best day, either just as a professional, a parent, what have you. I also talk about things such as tackling your work day, you know, getting even more nitty gritty about work. Because when people read my book, not only do I want them to have these like sparkly lives, you know, sparkle and grit, where they're excited about their life, but I really want to give them the tools too to succeed in the workplace, because that is so extremely important. And a lot of people, I think especially coming out of COVID, are struggling. I work with a lot of people struggling on how to succeed on a day-to-day level, so they make sure that they're showing up as the professional they need to be. And I talk about all sorts of other things as well, but like those are some of the biggies that,
What made it special for me was knowing that as an attorney, you were coming from the same space, the same viewpoint that I occupy, you know? I remember reading, who wrote the book, The Morning Routine?
Hal Higdon. Miracle Morning?
The Miracle Morning.
Right.
And, you know, and that was great. You know, it kind of inspired me for a little bit, but even coming from the same perspective as I am, and I thought this was really interesting from your point of view, because you are what many of our listeners are. I mean, mom, lawyer, wife, all the above. So when you talk about the morning routine, I know it's not some abstract concept. It's something that you've integrated into your own life. So talk a little bit about the things that are important for establishing a morning routine, because I'm going to confess to you, I don't have one.
Well, we need to get you started on one.
And I know, like, for instance, working out. I know for me, working out first thing in the morning is critical. If I don't do it first thing in the morning, it's highly unlikely to happen. Highly unlikely. Yeah. Not impossible, but it's highly unlikely. And it just, you know, kind of getting that starting pushing that boulder a little bit up the hill is a real challenge for a lot of folks, myself included. So, yeah, how would you go about structuring your morning routine?
Well, I think some people, when they think of a morning routine, they want everything all at once. And they see people with a morning routine. They might even like follow me, like on Instagram, and they see me in the stories doing all of my morning routine. They're like, okay, well, on Monday, I'm going to start my morning routine. And that means I'm going to wake up early. And they've never woken up like, you know, at 5 or 6 a.m. before. I'm going to wake up early. I'm going to work out. I'm going to read. I'm going to journal. I'm going to meditate. I'm going to do all these things. I'm going to get it all done within an hour and it's going to be great. And then, of course, it doesn't happen, you know, because it's too much. It's too much at once. And we haven't started small. So I think it's really important, the morning routine, and this I talk about in my book, is with an anchor of just one thing. Let's start with one thing, get that in place, get that going, and then you add the next thing and the next. So what I encourage the readers.
Very atomic habit like.
Exactly. 100%. 100%. So one of the things I encourage anybody, especially people with small children, especially people with small children, is you have, and for anything else, you must wake up before your kids, period. Like if your kids are getting you out of bed or you are sleeping until you hear like the baby crying on the monitor or until someone is like shaking you saying, hey, mom, it's time to get up. Like you've already started the day off behind.
Yeah. And if you wake, you're behind.
Yeah, all day. And like all day, because if you like, especially let's pretend that's like an average lawyer listener. So your kid has woken you up. So you're like, you're groggily waiting up. You're like, oh shoot, I only have like however much time to get them to the bus stop, get them fed, pack the lunch, you know, get myself dressed and ready, pack my lunch. But you know, I'm going to go look at my email just for fun. And then you got an obnoxious email from opposing counsel. Another email saying, seeing your order or your motion was denied, you know, and then something from a client, like a very high intense client. And you're so far behind the eight ball. And then you're just like struggling to catch up until you finally get to go to bed, you know, 13, 14 hours later, 15, however many hours later. And instead, if that same person can just wake up half an hour before their kid wakes up, pour themselves a cup of coffee, have a nice glass of water, and just sit there in silence, just like enjoying their coffee, not looking at their phone, and just like getting their thoughts into their head or their brain into the head. It's like I like to say it. Like that person has given themselves such a gift, right? Such a gift of just getting to be without all the outside demands piling on the moment they wake up. So I think that's number one. And then from there, just to then build in one anchor, right? So the anchor could be working out, like we both say. Like that's what started me in my morning routine. Like when I first started mine back in 2015, it was simply waking up at 6 a.m., coming downstairs to the kitchen, like I had some bootleg copy of a workout, like DVD, you know, booted it up, did my 25 minutes. And then I was a mom, you know, at that point. But like I started off that simply, just 25 minutes of working out. And then the other things came over time. But it takes time, right? Like it was like 2 years before I started reading as well. Like I'm still, if I'm 7 years into my morning routine, I'm still figuring out where meditation fits in and how often it fits in. But I know no matter what, I have my coffee, my water, and I sit in this chair in the corner and I read like a page of a devotional. I read my book, I journal, and then everything comes after that. And I don't know how not to do that anymore. And I think that's what's key, is you get so used to it, like atomic habits. You do it again and again and again to the point you don't know how not to, and your body just does it without even thinking about it.
Yeah, I remember reading in the book, Habits, how he said that One gentleman who wanted to establish that routine, you know, all he did was he got up in the morning and he put his gym shoes on.
Yeah.
Didn't go anywhere. You know, maybe the baby just went downstairs and had that cup of coffee, but he put his gym shoes on. And then next week, put his gym shoes on, gym clothes on, and drove to the gym. Didn't go in.
I remember that part of the story. I'd be so itchy to be him. I would want to go inside.
And so while this was taken to the extreme, I thought, well, this is really this concept of stacking habits to achieve a goal is really important. I've never got there. Even though intellectually I understand it and admire that process, I find myself saying, okay, just as you said, tomorrow I'm going to have my coffee, I'm going to meditate, which actually, by the way, it's the wrong way. It's kind of difficult to meditate right after you've had 16 ounces of caffeine. So maybe I need to reflect that on that a little more. I've never been able to get traction journaling. And then at that point now, I'm almost an hour into my day, and the email is calling me. And I know one of the things you said was don't read your email until you're at, quote, work.
Right.
And I think that's such great advice. It's hard, especially if you're a solo or small firm practitioner, where, I mean, one of the advantages is you can work whenever you want, which also means you can be sucked into work at all hours of the day. And the moment you open that email up, application up, it's over for me.
Right. Yep.
It's over. So I think your concept of don't open it or read it until you're, quote, at work, I think that's really a key little habit to stack in there.
Right. And you get to decide, right? Because some people are like, Wendy, but what if, like, I'm in trial or this is happening or I'm in a really tough period of work and I just have so much work and I can't keep up? Like, not one of us is perfect, right? And not one of us is a robot that does the same exact thing every day. I say more, if you can follow a morning routine more often than not, right? And then you're on those days more often than not. But like, let's say you just got back from vacation and work is on top of you. Like, okay, for a week, you can look at email sooner. Like, still get a couple of your morning routine pieces in. So at least you've given yourself the gift of that first, at least half hour of the day. So at least give yourself that half hour before you then jump onto Outlook and start like being an email ninja all day to like catch up from where you were before. Because, right, too, we don't want to commit malpractice. We want to make sure we're on top of our stuff, and we need to make money. We need to make money and bill our hours, you know, to put food on the table for our family. So
I think the world.
Right. But then it's just getting back, like, okay, like I got to cheat. And that's how I look at it. Like when I, you know, I come back from vacation, like, ooh, I get to cheat. I do get to look at emails first in the morning. And you sort of feel like you're doing something like naughty that you're not supposed to, you know, and get this like weird sick satisfaction from doing work. And then once you're caught up, you say, okay, and now I can get back to my normal morning routine, right? But not to ever think that, I think like in the personal development world, especially people now looking at me as this like personal development author, everyone else now says, oh, they must have it made. Wendy has it made. She's perfect. Like she's reached this pinnacle. She must do everything perfectly all the time. And it's simply not true, right? When I talk in my book, it's the very best practices and that I follow, you know, 90% of the time. But that's 90% of the time. 10% of the time, you know, it's like everybody else. And I think that's really important. Yeah. I think that helps readers and it helps listeners because they realize, oh, they don't have to be perfect all the time. No one's asking that. It's just, hey, can we start some good new habits like as soon as tomorrow?
Support for today's episode comes from Ruby, the number one client communication solution for growing legal practices. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, Ruby creates exceptional experiences for your callers and website visitors. They take messages, screen and transfer callers, schedule appointments, perform new client intake, confirm details with outbound calls, and can answer in English and Spanish, and a whole lot more. Just like an in-house receptionist, only better, because they turn every ring into a relationship. Ruby can work full-time, part-time, or as a backup, and you can change your instructions anytime with their top-rated mobile app and online dashboard. Plus, Ruby integrates with tools such as Clio, Lexaclara, MyCase, and Rocket Matter. It all adds up to more opportunities and more time saved. In fact, 90% of legal professionals who use Ruby capture more billable hours than the national average, with many recording double or more. That's 5 or more billable hours per day. To experience the Ruby difference for yourself, visit get.ruby.com/ELE. That's get.ruby.com/TLE, as in the law entrepreneur, for up to $150 off your first month. Imagine you, powered by Ruby. As a law firm owner, you take responsibility for driving more revenue for your firm. But how much of that revenue ends up as bottom line profit? Ryan Kimmler, the net profit CFO, helps law firms drive more top line revenue to bottom line profit. His two game changing tools are the scorecard, so you can actually know what your numbers are and can make informed decisions,
and the action plan so you know how to get your numbers where you want them to be and drive more net profit. To learn more about Ryan, check out episode 306 of The Law Entrepreneur, and you can get a free profit acceleration call by going to go.oncehub, that's O-N-C-E-H-U-B, go.oncehub.com/profit. I will also tell you, just as an aside, I am a client of Ryan's. I've been working with him for the past 6 months. Frankly, ever since he did that episode with me, I signed on with him to be a client. And I've been thrilled with the kind of information and insight he's been able to give me. So do yourself a favor, you know, get that free call and check out Ryan Kimmler at netprofit.com.
I wanted to jump into another section of the book too that really caught my eye. And again, you know, I feel like you're talking because this is so where I'm at right now. And it was chapter on making new friends. And the question, do you really need to hold on to the old one? Again, for a solo practitioner or a small firm owner, it's really easy to let your world shrink down to just you and the job.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't, you can really become kind of isolated. And tell me a little bit about some of the suggestions you had with respect to making friends and expanding outward for good mental health.
Yeah. So I think, people do a friendship assessment in the book, and where people really think about, like, who do they talk to the most, right? Out of everyone, who do they, and then how do they feel like when they're in the presence of this person? And is it like good or bad? Because some people, they might be like, oh yeah, I love this person so much. Like, I want to keep this up. This is a good and healthy friendship for me. But, you know, time is so limited and short. And then sometimes you find, okay, well, I talk to this one person all the time, but every time I hang up the phone or every time I'm driving home after lunch or coffee, like, I don't feel great. I feel depleted. I feel tired. This did not fill my cup. You know, this, like, there's something about this isn't working. I think it's time to reevaluate the friendship, and not in a way that you have to, like, go breaking up with people. Like, I'm not a fan of breaking up with friends, right? Mm-mm. But it can be that you don't, like, especially if you're the one making the effort out of some sort of strange guilt feeling, you don't need to make the effort anymore. You don't need to send the text or email or call and say, hey, let's still meet up, like, out of a feeling of guilt. And if the friend calls you, you can say, oh, I can't this time, what have you. You know, you don't have to say yes to every single invitation. But I think the more important, yeah. And I think, again, like, our time is so limited. We really should be hanging out and spending time with the people we really enjoy spending time with, and that fills our cup, where we leave the conversation feeling amazing. So also maybe thinking about, okay, where are the last three conversations, interactions I had where I felt really good and I could have been in this person's presence for hours and I didn't want to leave. And when I came home, even though I was driving home at 9:30 at 10 o'clock at night, I felt absolutely energized, right? And so, like, my example of that friend is this girl, Carolyn, who works in my building. And okay, so what do I do? So that now means, well, that is someone I should be trying to hang out with. So rather than trying to hang out with Susie Q, I always call the villain, you know, Susie Q. Rather than making any effort to hang out with Susie Q, I'm like, okay, instead, because I had some, like, guilt obligation, oh, like, what about Carolyn? Let's see if Carolyn's available for coffee, or is Carolyn available to take a walk? And just putting my focus and attention there. What I'm finding with a lot of my coaching clients, they're like, but Wendy, I have these people who I don't really want to hang out with anymore, but I don't have that second set of people. Like, I work from home. I don't see anybody. Like, I don't even know who I like.
That was just going to be my point. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So then when I encourage, I'm like, well, what sorts of things do you like to do? And sometimes there's another wall there. Like, I don't even know what I like to do. I have no flipping clue what I like to do because I've been so focused on working and having babies, you know? But then it might be like, okay, well, you used to love to run. Okay, let's get you to the local running club and see if you can make new friends in that way. Or one of my friends, she's big into, like, guitar and singing. And somehow she found herself, she's in a garage band. So like at 43 years old, all of a sudden she's like in this garage band and they have gigs. And she has this whole new side of herself. Because I really encourage people to, if they're going to find their new set of friends, that it's something either creative, like, you know, the garage band friend, or it's something like athletic, you know, with the endorphins going and everything else, like a running club. That's where I do like to sort of push people, you know, people with like similar interests, that then they can start formulate those friendships. But like friendships don't usually just fall in your lap. You know, you do have to go find them and cultivate them.
Well, I resemble that remark because a lot of our listeners know being a musician now is my fifth career. And I started playing what I lovingly call a dad band, female lead singer. And none of us are spring chickens. And it's been terribly rewarding. And we play all over town. And so this is where I kind of focus my attention in creating new friendships and expanding new relationships is in that community. It's completely separate from my business community. It's completely separate from my podcast community. And it's been a great outlet for me.
That's fabulous. That is so awesome to hear.
So lastly, I want to also touch base on, well, let's plug the book again. Make sure our readers are clear what it is. It's called Sparkling Grit, Live a Technicolor Life by Finally Finding Balance, Escaping Monotony, and Beating Burnout. It's available any place you buy books, and I encourage our audience to do just that. But I want to also talk about another service. Let me confess to you. I always thought the term life coach is a dopey idea.
You're not the only one. You're not the only one.
Like, come on. Are you kidding me? I need a coach to live.
I know.
It's only when I started actually needing a coach to live did I realize that, no, a life coach, that's a pretty accurate statement. But I wanted to talk a little bit about one of the services that you provide, and I think this is just really utterly brilliant, in which law firms bring you on board to coach up their underperforming employee.
Yes.
Tell me how that came about and how that works and what kinds of things do you do in that scenario?
Yeah. And I have to say, Neil, this is some of my favorite work I do because I've been a life coach now for several years. It is, because as a life coach, I know I'm helping. And I just say, so you know, I have to do like four areas of like the circle, right? Like health, self, family, and work, right? So like the neat thing about life coaches, you can talk to one person to help you excel in every single area. And that's where I think I'm really powerful to other lawyer moms. I say I'm the best coach to lawyer moms because I get them, I understand them, and I can help in all four areas, right? But what I don't have is and always in those cases, you know, somebody above the lawyer mom saying, yes, and she is actually doing the things that the two of you talk about, right, in your sessions. And not only is she doing the things, but we are now also seeing like an increase in productivity or happiness or like whatever it may be. So like I have a great relationship, you know, with my clients, but sometimes I want to know, well, how is this actually transpiring in real life? So that's the cool thing about this other work that I do, where I'm like a law firm consultant. And I get to know, like I get to hear from the managing partner that, oh my gosh, like for example, I had one person who wasn't billing all her hours. She wasn't billing all her hours because she felt guilty about it, billing all her hours. And she maybe wasn't as time efficient as she could be. And we took her from there to now she just last week was the top biller for her firm, which is huge, right? Like that went from like the most underperforming person to the top person. So I think that's a pretty good metric right there. But how I fell into it, you know, and this sort of is my life story, is people say, hey, Wendy, I think you might be good at this. So I was talking with another law firm partner who runs a medium-sized firm, and she was like, I don't know what to do with this person. I know she's a great lawyer. I know she can be really great. But I don't know what she needs. I think she needs you. I think if she had you, we can get her to be the lawyer I know she can be, because she's not listening to me anymore. Just like, you know, how kids never really like to listen to advice from their parents until much later, they'd rather hear it from somebody else. Yeah. I feel it's it's similar, right? So she's like, I think you can help. So she brought me on board and I worked with this attorney over the course of like, I think 3 or 6 months. I just can't remember right now the exact time period, but I worked with them. But I worked with them with parameters, right? Because this employee was actually on a PIP, with PIP's Employee Improvement Plan. So The PIP also gave the attorney very specific parameters of what she needed to do in order to like keep her job, right? So I was able to work with those very specific parameters, make sure she met them. And then now she's like doing better work for the firm and also just happy, right? Because sometimes the thing that's going on with the associate has nothing to do with the practice of law, that there's something else there, but they're not, that they are comfortable talking with me about because I'm a coach, you know, and then we fix or finagle that thing, get that running happily, and then we can better address the problems they're having at the firm. So I did it with her and I had some success. And then that lawyer referred me to another firm and that firm referred me to another firm. And that just keeps happening. And I have these awesome people I get to work with. And like I said, I think it really is some of my favorite work I do, because not only do I hear from my coaching client that they're happy with the relationship and they're seeing more success, but I get to hear it from their bosses as well.
I think that is really such a remarkable insightful approach that really isn't exploited enough. Because, you know, look, you can't swing a dead cat anymore without knocking over a bunch of attorney coaches that are coming in and teach you how to run your business more efficiently, how to, you know, time manage, how to hire a team, how to fire people, all of those things. But you're the first one that I've ever really heard of that says, let me come in and help your employee help you. And it's a great buffer because, you know, put yourself in the employee's position. They get handed this performance improvement and they know what this means. This means this is the last step before they're going to get fired. They're lucky that they got the performance improvement plan, because many firms, you know, don't even do that. They just say, nah, you're not meeting our expectations. Thanks for everything. See you later. But so they got this plan. So they know they need to improve. They know what's expected of them. And then the employer leaves it up to them to implement. And very seldom, you know, circles back to see how they're doing, what challenges they may have in completing that plan. But by putting you in that position, the employee says, well, they really do think I'm worth saving. Yeah. It immediately bolsters their self-confidence, and it makes them more inclined to adhere to the plan and to try and meet the objectives. And I just think it's really, really smart, Wendy.
Thank you. You're making me feel so like warm and fuzzy inside. You know, and you hit the nail on the head, and I never really thought about it this way, which is, they get this PIP and they're like, okay, yeah, I know I'm underperforming. I mean, they know if they're not billing right, or they're not responsive to client emails, or their writing is crap, or like whatever it might be. I mean, that's not how it's drafted in there, but they don't know how to fix it. If they knew how to fix it, they would have fixed it already, right? They don't want to be underperforming. You know, they don't want to be this person. They just don't know how, and they don't have anyone sitting down and teaching them, because obviously law school doesn't teach us these things, you know?
No.
And I come from it, just the approach you said, which is, oh my gosh, you are so lucky. Your firm thinks so highly of you and they don't want to lose you that they hired a coach. Like, they are investing money in you, even though like maybe you're not bringing the amount of money you should be to the firm, and your firm is still willing to invest in you.
And if that doesn't motivate you,
exactly,
you can't be motivated.
Exactly. Yes. And so that's the other piece about this too. And I haven't gotten here yet, but I am very clear with the employer and the employee. And you did ask me how it works, and I don't think I explained that part. But I am clear with both people in the beginning. If I come to find that this is no longer a good fit, right? Like, if the employee is like, Wendy, I don't even want to be here. I don't know how to get out. What am I supposed to do? Because that could come up, that, you know, that we can talk about it in a graceful way. So the person's not just getting fired, but it could be more of like almost like a mediation then of sorts between employer and employee, saying, okay, well, let's keep you on for this much longer. Because also employers don't want to lose employees like with 2 weeks notice, because then they're scrambling. but let's give a longer runway. Let's give this, let's get this person a good recommendation, maybe find them a place or a practice of law, a different area of law that is more well suited to them. And let's get them there gracefully and like amicably rather than it being this like weird, awkward split. So I do have that conversation with both employer and employee up front. In terms of how it works is typically, you know, the employer will reach out to me. I send a contract, have the employer and employee sign it. I ask for the PIP so I can see the PIP, see exactly what we're working with. I'll meet with the firm first, like the managing partner or the partners in charge. I meet with them first, come up with some goals and objectives. And then I meet with, you know, the attorney I'm working with. And if what I need to circle back to the partners, I do. But I primarily do most of my work with the struggling associate. And after each session, I send a summary of what we discussed to the partners, but I run it by the associate first. Because sometimes there's stuff in there that the associate doesn't want me sharing. And it's nothing bad. It's just stuff that's personal. They don't really want their bosses knowing about. It has nothing to do with their work. So I'll write the email, make sure it is structured in a way the associate feels comfortable. And then I'll send it off to the partners so they can see what progress we're making. And I also, you know, check in with the partners to make sure that they're seeing progress on their end, of course. Mm-hmm. So I do like an intro and an outro with them. And yeah, just a lot of one-on-one with the employee. And sometimes employees need more help. So sometimes like I'm meeting with them weekly and sometimes it starts weekly and then it's more monthly, but it depends on how many things we need to work with, you know, with each person.
And now are you finding that some of the root of the problem lies outside the workplace and you're able to counsel them, say, in their, you know, relationships or life issues, the other things that you address as a life coach beyond just the performance improvement plan? Do you find that there's those factors get addressed as well?
100%. 100%.
Is that right?
It's you. Yeah. And it's not that I'm counseling them, because I'm not a counselor or a therapist. I'm just a coach. So really a coach is an independent thinking partner, like asking you the questions that you're too afraid to ask yourself and demanding answers. Really, that's what a coach is. Where the only place this is different in this work is I'm a coach and consultant, and a consultant more in terms of these are the things your firm needs to do in order for you to maintain your job, right? Like to keep it there. But we get into the other areas, and oftentimes it's confidence. Oftentimes it's they are hearing their partner say one thing or their boss say one thing. And maybe the boss isn't the most effective boss in some ways, you know, but they need to hear from another way to understand. Like, for example, I had a client recently, you know, she wasn't billing as much as she should be billing. And we come to find out it's because she felt guilty. She felt guilty charging the clients all this money, you know, because family law, this is the family law one where you do feel guilty charging your clients all this money because you know exactly how much money they have and you fear your client will go into debt. Like, you're a good person. You don't want this to happen to your client. But where I reframed it for her and where she was like, oh, I'm like, when you don't bill the hours that you are actually working on the motion or the case or on the phone with the client, when you're not billing that, you're actually stealing from your firm because your firm is paying you for that time. And she said, oh, I'm like, yeah. And then that totally reframed how she looked at it. You know, I'm like, at the end of the day, your boss, like they're your employers. Like, you need to do what they say. Like, you need to account for your time. And that was a big wake up call for her, I think.
Yeah. Well, as I said, I think it's a brilliant approach to team building. I think as a niche for a consultant, it's equally brilliant. I see a great future in that for you. And as you said, it's some of the most rewarding work that you do. So I'd be shocked if it doesn't continue to grow and become ever more powerful and important in your life. So Wendy, listen, thank you for taking the time to be with us again today. It's so delightful to have you. And again, we'll have all the information about Sparkle and Grit in our show notes for those of you who want to connect that way. Other than that, what's the best way for our audience to reach out to you if they want to get more of what you have to offer?
Yeah, the easiest way is through my website, which I'm sure will be in the show notes, thewendysmeadows.com. There's a link on there to book a call with me. Just If you just want to chat about anything we've talked about here today, like, oh, maybe this is a fit for me or my firm, I'd be more than happy to chat with you. You know, a lot of life coaches do this like really hardcore discovery call, like with really a high, like a sales, like high intense sales call. That is not how I operate mine. But they call that guilt in there. I think it's awful. Yeah. But just like a conversation. Like I invite anyone who wants to have a conversation about anything we just discussed in there, and we can have a conversation and see where I could perhaps be a good fit for the firm. And if you're like, oh, I don't know about this Wendy person, but this sounds sort of intriguing, you know, the lowest entry point is the book. In the book, you get so much of my coaching advice and things I discuss with my clients all the time. And I think it's a really fun, inexpensive way to sort of life coach yourself, you know, without having to invest in somebody else.
Yeah. As I said, I really enjoyed the book. I felt like it was very conversational. You're speaking directly to me. So I'm sure that would be the case for our audience. So once again, awesome. Wendy, thanks ever so much for being a guest today on The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you, Neil.
Well, there you have it, boys and girls, another episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors for this episode, our good friends at Ruby. I can't say enough about Ruby. As you know, they've been my virtual receptionist for years now. Couldn't be happier with them, and I really urge all of you, if you need a virtual receptionist, that you give Ruby a chance. Also, Net Profit CFO, as I've mentioned before, Ryan Kimler was a guest on the program some time ago. I liked what he had to say so much, I became a client. And then after I became a client, he became a sponsor. So very happy about that arrangement. If you want to take your understanding of your financials in your law firm to that next step beyond just what your bookkeeper gives you back, give Ryan a call at Net Profit CFO. I don't think you'll be disappointed. If you enjoyed this podcast, do me the great favor of leaving a positive rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. It really helps with the opportunity for us to get in front of other people. And until next week, I wish you all the best, and we'll see you again here on Law Entrepreneur.